It's time for the all-new Gervie's Law, cross-examining the ages, with your host, Alan Gervie, and introducing your co-host, Michelle Lobato. Alan is the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm which has represented injured workers for over 40 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Hi, I am Alan Gervie, and this is Gervie's Law. And of course, I am here today with the self-healer, Michelle Lobato.
I am Michelle Lobato, and this is still Gervie's Law.
And are you still a self-healer?
I don't know what that means, but maybe our guest can
you heal your. I want to talk about a guest. I'm talking to you here. Do you heal yourself? I will tell you a story. You don't have to answer
okay.
that. When my kids were born, they were like 2-3 years old. They were 14 months apart. And I came into this parenting thing and I kept saying, if there's a will, there's a way. If there's a will, there's a way. You know, they'd be crying and screaming and I'd say, you can control yourself. If there's a will, there's a way. Very quickly, I learned that that doesn't work. Like, you can say that all you want, but it's really hard to change your ways. There's something much deeper involved than just words. Just saying, come on, kid. If there's a will, there's a way. Go to the bathroom. Take the diaper off.
Yeah.
You know, and you know what happened. Just.
They got potty trained?
Eventually, but not at that time. And I know, you know, with you, because when I say you're a self-healer, you seem to be able to really control a lot of things. And
my emotions, yes.
Your emotions. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, can't control everything else.
We're not talking about being potty trained here.
Okay.
We're talking emotions.
Emotionally trained.
And I believe in that, but a lot of people don't.
Yeah, it's a very valuable skill, actually.
And it's not easy.
No.
And sometimes you need help.
Absolutely, all the time.
And that's why our guest today, Dr. Nicole Lapera, is such a sought-after person with millions and millions of followers on social media. She's a holistic psychologist. What do you think a holistic psychologist is, Michelle?
A person who goes beyond just the science and the facts and can really look towards a more spiritual path.
Well, let's find out.
Yeah.
She's a clinical psychologist, New York Times bestselling author. The book is How to Do the Work, Recognize Your Patterns, Heal Your Past, and Create Yourself. And what's interesting, it's yourself, not yourself. It's a big difference, yourself. But of course, she's known with all her followers and people who go gaga about her, including my wife, who found out she was on the show. And I know, Michelle, you're a big follower.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that people really need. Dr. Nicole Lapera, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Thank you both for having me. I'm truly honored to be here.
Well, we're honored to have you. And I have to ask you right from the outset, and I don't mean to embarrass you at all, but why are you so popular? Why do people really resonate with what you write and what you say?
I think why I'm so popular is exactly what you were describing with your own children. I think there's a lot of us out there that are feeling stuck. Some of us who have incredible insight, awareness, maybe have all the support around us, the helping therapists, yet we continue to repeat dysfunctional patterns that don't serve us. So I think when I speak to that, I'm speaking to quite a universal issue that many of us kind of find ourselves up against. And I think I do so in a way that feels understandable, also practically applicable to a lot of people's lives.
And how long ago did you start your social media journey?
So my actual social media journey started, I think, gosh, it was probably 2018 now. And it was actually inspired by the private practice that I had been in at that time for several years. And I was finding myself feeling really disempowered alongside of the clients that were sitting in my office, but also as a human who was struggling with, you know, my own patterns, my own anxiety, my own patterns in relationships where I wasn't feeling as fulfilled. And so my journey began me trying to seek first an answer. Why did all of this training and why isn't it translating to the actions, the relief and suffering, the breaking of habits and patterns, but both in my own lives, but also in the lives of the clients that I was working with. And as I began to understand that the answer, in my opinion, lives in the body, is exactly as you were even, Michelle, describing, emotions that live in the body that very few of us have learned the resources or have the tools to deal with in a way that allows us to navigate life in the way that we want to.
You know, when I was in college at Brown, I studied philosophy, and one of the things that stuck with me for so long was the concept of mauvaise foi, which is basically bad faith. And in one of my classes, we talked about putting a mask on and being afraid to take off the mask. And therefore, when we behaved in public or whatever we did, we had this mauvaise foi because we couldn't get to the core of who we were. And obviously what you talk about in terms of pain that maybe people aren't understanding or willing to address. Do you see a comparison between a mauvaise foi type philosophy and what you have written and what you talk about in terms of the self-healing and coming to grips of the reality of your childhood and who you are?
100%. And so I speak a lot about in all of my work, but in particular, my newest book, Reparenting the Inner Child, about childhood, our earliest environments, and in particular, our earliest relationships, because a human infant is born, as it sounds like you have some yourself, completely dependent on the caregivers around them, not only for their physical care, but also for their emotional regulation. So the question in childhood really becomes, who do I have to be to get the people around me to show up in care of me? And that's where that mask really begins, because very few of us had present caregivers, let alone emotionally attuned caregivers who knew how to calm themselves down through stressful experiences, including us crying and being dysregulated as we often are. And so instead of, obviously we don't have the option in childhood to pack our bags and leave the environment in which we find ourselves or the relationship, our best adaptive thing to do is to modify how we're showing up, to put the mask on that fits into our, you know, relational structure, our family, even our society, our cultural belief systems and everything in between, so that we can ensure that whatever version of care is available, that that person is showing up to the best of their ability.
I just want to ask one question. I know, Michelle, you want to jump in here, but when you talk about, you know, your book, The Reparenting, we hear so much out there about how much your childhood, your parenting influences who you are as an adult. And I know it's obviously difficult to reparent, but how did you come up with the concept? And do you think that maybe it's a little more difficult than just saying the word reparenting, given all of the years that we all experienced with our parents for the good or the bad or otherwise?
100%. It's a difficult journey because our body will drive us to repeat habits, even ones that are self-abandoning, self-neglectful, or dysfunctional, because we gain a sense of familiarity, predictability, and the false sense of safety in those habits. So thankfully, there was a time in the not so distant past where we believed that our brain, once it was functioned sometime in our 20s, we didn't believe that it could change. We now know differently. We know that our brain and body is what is called neuroplastic, or it can change. So with that said, of course, these habits for many of us become our autopilot, our go-to. They're what we will continue to repeat, though what I hope to always speak to is the choices that we can begin to make, of course, consistently over time to show up in new ways, physical care, emotional attunement, so that we can, for those of us who didn't have those needs met in childhood, we can lay down some not only new habits, but actually the neural network in our mind and body that will allow those habits to, over time, be how we continue to then operate.
And what do you say to the skeptics, those that don't believe that their childhood has any bearing on their relationships as an adult and they've overcome their trauma? Are there any specific examples you usually provide that are very practical?
Absolutely. And I think I understand the skeptics for many different reasons. I mean, for some of us, we don't want to look back because it's a painful place. For others, we are well up in age beyond that childhood time. We're living in different geographical locations, different relationships. But I think we have all had those moments where we find ourselves maybe shamefully or embarrassingly acting out of character, right? Where we're overreacting to a current moment, and it seems as if it's instinctual. We have a sense of urgency in our body. Our body kind of, our heart rate begins to increase, our muscles begin to clench. And then before we know it, we find ourselves either saying and doing things that are, again, out of character, that aren't in alignment with who we want to be and the care maybe we want to offer our loved ones around us, or others, we find ourselves disconnecting, shutting down, not being able to create the connections that we need, the support, or reach out for the support. So I think when we kind of understand that the inner child and childhood doesn't just live as a concept, it's actually wired into our body. And a lot of us, I think, we can feel those moments where sometime after the fact, when our body has calmed down, we see a different perspective of the thing that we felt so sure and urgent about in the moment that it happened.
Do you think that classical therapy, or what we consider to be therapy, which, by the way, it seems to be exploding, so many people are seeking answers and support through therapy. Do you think that can address what you're talking about, or are you against it in the sense that you have to come to that on your own, not with a therapist necessarily?
I think having a safe space with a supportive person with whom we feel we can share, for some of us, the only space that we share some of these experiences that we're having, is absolutely part of the therapeutic process. They actually studied, so we have so many different ways to, right, do therapy, cognitive behavioral, kind of more kind of supportive analytic based. And what they discovered, kind of studying all different types of modalities, so to speak, is that we can't really determine what the gold standard is, what creates the most change or efficacy. What they have found through research is that what creates change in a therapeutic relationship is the relationship, the safety, the space. For some of us, we don't share some of our struggles with anyone in our outside life. There's no one who's safe and supportive to do that with, or we feel embarrassed to do that. So for some of us, you know, being able to have a place that we go to, we share what's on our mind, we are able to gain insight and awareness then, of course, around what we might be struggling with. In my opinion, at least, it's half of the story, because the other half, and what I mean when I say holistic, is, of course, honoring our whole self, mind, soul, but also foundationally body. Because when I'm talking about these parts of us, they are really driven by physiological reactions wired into our nervous system, that if we don't take the work from the therapeutic session and begin to make new choices in our daily life, we're going to continue to repeat those bad patterns, because our body will quite literally take over.
So you had mentioned that you started your social media journey back in 2018 when you were at a point where you were feeling unfulfilled. Has there now been a moment where you've felt... Has been exceptional in the whole social media journey?
This journey for me, in sharing not only my own individual struggles, again, which is something historically as a therapist, we were kind of trained never to speak from personal experience, but also, you know, speaking to a community that is so in need of this type of information, but also accessible tools, has not only been integral in my own healing, because I, like many of us, I think a lot of us feel alone in what we're struggling with. We feel like we're the only one feeling this way, doing this thing. And so I have gained so much healing myself as I share parts of my journey. Of course, not everyone can resonate or relate with exactly what I've been through. All of our experiences are different. But those who can, when I go through the comments, I feel a little less alone. And so for me, not only is it kind of therapeutic, individually speaking, working in this way in a community-driven model, understanding that so many of us feel alone, and because most of our trauma happened in relationship, as I was saying earlier, right, because we had to adapt ourselves in relationship, most of our healing then has to happen in relationship. So I now will call what I do While there was a decades in my life, I did not think I had a purpose or a passion. I heard people talk about those concepts and I could never relate to them. I now wholeheartedly know that my desire to share this information, these accessible tools and resources with whoever is interested in listening is such a driving kind of passion and purpose of mine that I will continue forevermore.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because something that resonated with me, something that you've said, which I think is so important, in reference to your mother's unfortunate passing, and I know you had a very close relationship, maybe complicated, but you said that your mother's life would continue through your work. And I think so much of that is so true for a lot of us, where we can really feel better about ourselves when we know someone who was close to us or someone who had a big part in our life, like mm-hmm. a mother, her life continues on. And if it's through your work or through who you are or through helping people, it makes her life just so much more important and so special because you can do what you're doing now, representing where you came from.
Alan, thank you. I'm feeling myself getting choked up hearing you say that and receiving it. She'll actually, on May 23rd, it will, as crazy as it is for me to even say this, it'll be 5 years since she passed. And so when I speak of my mother, I really understand now, having all this awareness, how much her own trauma from her childhood, from happenings that happened in my kind of core family unit before I was born in my early years, how much that, you know, contributed to, at least in my opinion, her lifelong experience of chronic pain, mystery illness, always trying to find a diagnosis to relieve her suffering and never really finding the cause. And so I am so motivated now to give others this information and maybe even tools and resources so that while my mom died in pain, so to speak, and my whole family suffered watching her suffer, my hope and goal is to put something on someone's path that they can utilize and do differently, not only for themselves, but break cycles within their own family. And in my opinion, so thank you for honoring that. There is no greater way that I would love to honor my mom's memory and her difficulties than by contributing and hopefully impacting at least one person out there in this way.
You know, I so appreciate that. My mom passed away actually 3 years ago on May 18th. Which was a few days after Mother's Day in 2023. Your mom passed away a couple years before, it sounds like, May 23rd. So we share that. But what we also share, which is so much more important, is the love that we have. And, you know, when I think of Mother's Day, I always think of my mother. In fact, I think of my mother every day because so many things I do are guided by who she was mm-hmm. and how special she was. And I always honor her. We do have Mother's Day, but like you and what you've said about your mom, we can honor and live our lives through our mothers to the extent that they are special for us. And I know not everyone has what you and I are talking about, but there are so many people that do. And I think we can honor all mothers who have given up so much for the support of their children.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for acknowledging that. And I think the reality, even expanding it to perhaps all listeners, is we are carrying our parents with us. Despite their best intentions, I think most of us who are now adults were raised with generations who lacked information, had inaccurate information, lacked resources, and many of which who were quite literally doing the best they could with what they were themselves were given. So the reality of it is, again, even if we don't believe that childhood is impacting us, we do carry a legacy of our parents, whether they are present on this earth or no longer present, whether we think fondly of them when they come to mind or not. They are within us, and we do now have the choice to no longer allow our past to continue to determine our future, but to show up in a new way. And we actually have the past then not only to influence our own current lived experience, but we now know through epigenetics, we can quite literally influence the way all of our offspring and future generations will operate in the world. So it's for while it's a lot of us, it's a difficult time, especially if we do not have a parent physically present anymore. They are still within us, and we still can heal to some extent and create the change that maybe we had desperately wanted while they were still here.
You know, I really admire the way you stand in your truth and you really own your life, and you share that very vulnerably. Something that I know gained a lot of traction was when you discussed your polyamory and the relationship that you have. Would you mind sharing that a bit with us?
Absolutely. So I did have, several years ago, I was in a three-person relationship. It was not anything that was necessarily expected, but it was what crossed my path in that moment. I am not currently in that relationship, though, anymore, but I felt it was important to speak to it at the time because I do share so much of my own lived experience, and it was something that was a very much a big part of my life. And I was starting to have the moments where, you know, I was speaking from my relational experience, and I was starting to find myself kind of pausing and censoring and editing how I was describing certain situations. So for me, you know, even though I knew at the time and even still in this time, different types of relationships are not as understood, definitely not as accepted. I did have the kind of internal desire to live in my truth, not only to give me the freedom of being able to speak in authenticity, but to perhaps be a model for some other relationships out there that were a bit more of the non-traditional standard, so to speak.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I think authenticity is such a great word, and it reflects something that was written about your book, How to Do the Work. I just want to read it now. It says, one of the reviewers says, "I didn't expect a book to hit this hard, but How to Do the Work by Nicole LaPera wasn't just something I read. It became something I worked through. This book helped me start healing in ways I didn't even know I needed. I've always considered myself someone who reflects a lot, but this book pushed me to go deeper, much deeper. What stood out most were the questions at the end of each chapter. They weren't your typical think about this kind of prompts. They were real, sometimes uncomfortable, and always honest. I'd find myself staring at the page thinking, do I really want to go there? And then I would. And that's where the growth happened. Some of the reflections brought tears, others relief, but many brought clarity." And I think that's what you're talking about, whether it's about relationships with others or your relationship with yourself.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, change begins with not only awareness, right, where we take the moments to see ourselves without judgment, but grace and compassion, but also with honesty. And that's such a brave, and I want to acknowledge everyone out there who's on a journey of creating change in their life. It is such a brave thing to do, because to be honest, to look at ourselves, whether it's past relationships with our family of origin or the way we're currently operating in the world, I mean, I will be the first to acknowledge I've had to look at a lot of difficult realizations, a lot of patterns that weren't serving me and were, you know, not only causing disconnection in my life, but, you know, in moments where were contributing to me not showing up as the person that I want to be. And that level of honesty, you know, without being aware and honest, we're never going to give ourselves the opportunity to take the next step to actually change, right? Make new choices in those moments that more closely align with who it is that we want to become. So I want to acknowledge and thank you for bringing that up, because I think when we want to change, whatever inspires us into new action, because we're in the depths of despair, we can't imagine life continuing on as it is. That's usually what motivates someone to begin to do something differently. I think logically and hopefully we have this idea or expectation that, oh, things should just get easy. And the reality of it is that they don't necessarily get easy, at least not immediately. To become aware, to reconnect with all of the feelings that we've been carrying with us, all of the unmet needs, some of the difficult truths about the patterns that we've had to adapt at one time and are continuing to repeat, even though the context has changed, actually results in a lot of discomfort before the relief.
Right, exactly. And we only have a minute and a half. I started the show off by asking Michelle what a holistic psychologist was. In 30 seconds, tell us from the holistic psychologist, what holistic psychology is, and importantly, how people who may be hearing this for the first time aren't one of your followers, how they can become your followers and get your books.
Absolutely. So to me, holistic psychology, holistic psychologist is really honoring the connectedness between our mind, our body, and kind of the greater sense of who we are, our passion, our purpose, our belonging, whether we want to call that spirit or soul or whatever it is that resonates. I believe we are something beyond even our mind and our body. So that's what holistic psychology means to me, is gaining awareness that all of those parts of us are contributing to our lived experiences, and of course, giving us some tools in all of those areas to live life more fully. So if you want more information about who I am, I'm across all the different social media platforms at this point. So however it is that you choose to consume your content, whether it's Where It All Began on the Instagram account or YouTube, TikTok, X, it is some version of the handle, The Holistic Psychologist. All of my now 4 books are available wherever books are sold, on Audible and Kindle as well. And I also have a community program, a membership, Self Healer Circle, that you can find more information at selfhealercircle.com.
Dr. Nicole LaPera, thank you so much for joining us here on Gervie's Law today.
This was such an honor. Thank you both for having me, and thank you all for listening.
All right, and happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. That's going to do it for Gervie's Law for this week. We'll see you next week.